Because life is brief, and many are the pains which, living and struggling, everyone sustains, let us follow our desires, passing and consuming the years, because whoever deprives himself of pleasure, to live with anguish and with worries, doesn't know the tricks of the world, or by what ills and by what strange happenings all mortals are almost overwhelmed. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host. Because life is brief, let us follow our desires has rather a contemporary ring to it. Yet those words were penned in 1512 by the playwright and philosopher and politico Niccolò Machiavelli in his play La Mandragola, The Mandrake. Machiavelli is, of course, best known for his book The Prince, that gives advice on how to rule. That book contains observations such as, "All ethical and moral values are arbitrary artifacts from the culture that set them forth. All political and military greatness is derived from ignoring them." La Mandragola is, in a sense, that kind of thinking turned into a play, and Dr. Kent Lisnowski has been teaching that play with amazing results. Dr. Lisnowski.
So Machiavelli is an Italian politico who's working during the 16th century and attempting to do his best work to try to reunite an Italy that is in many, many pieces. And he would like a united Italy, and he'd like the French out, and he's willing to advise whichever the strongest party is that he thinks can get this done. Now, for his money, that seems to be the Medici family, and he has some success with them. But, yeah, he's basically a political advisor for hire, seeking patrons throughout his life to try to bring about this political unity of Italy, which, unfortunately for him, he never really sees in his life. And he goes through much, much suffering at the hands of would-be patrons and enemies, but manages to come out of it with an impressively hopeful attitude.
Now, people know Machiavelli's The Prince, but he also wrote drama, including La Mandragola. Tell us about the story of that play.
So this comedy is basically the story of a young gentleman who has the world at his fingertips. And one of the things that is right at his fingertips, but outside of his grasp, is a woman that he thinks is the most beautiful person he's ever met. And what does he want with her? Nothing but a base love affair. It's also the story of that same woman and her husband, who happens to be much older. They find themselves infertile. And what do they want more than anything? An heir. So it's the story of these folks and their desires. And the perfect advisor, sort of lurking in the background, Ligurio, who can make everything they want come true. And so he gives advice to this young gentleman about how he can get his way with this woman, while at the same time, ironically, giving that couple exactly what it is they want. And it's a story of how that comes to be, essentially, how that trick is played out.
Okay, but it's a trick.
Indeed.
It's a comedy about tricking the virtuous woman, Lucrezia, into an adulterous affair under the nose of her husband with the help of a schemer, her mother, her priest, and they all lived happily ever after. Have we got that right?
You've got it right. All the people you expect to do the right thing do the wrong thing for the wrong reasons. And everything works out perfectly, and everyone's happy at the end. It's bombastic, it's ridiculous, it's disordered. It's everything Machiavelli was looking for in a comedy.
Now, was this political satire or political critique? This being 16th century Florence, surely it was political on some level. Or was it just setting to drama Machiavelli's basically amoral political philosophy?
Yeah, I think what you have here is an extended metaphor. Machiavelli considers himself, like I said, an advisor for hire. I think if you asked him, he might say he's in that role of the Gurio, right? He's in the role of that advisor behind the scenes, the only character who truly is the master of himself. He has no real stated desires. He's simply the plotter, the schemer, the master of understanding other people and how to get things done. So he's sort of lurking in the background as that advisor, right? And so the prince character would really be that young gentleman who has a desire but doesn't know how to fulfill it. And so Machiavelli is saying, look, I'm the guy who can get stuff done for you. Listen to my political advice. Take my way of doing things and move forward with it. And who are the rest of the characters? Well, the priest is simply the corrupt religious of the day. The old man is sort of represents the old morality, the old way of doing politics that seeks the Aristotelian virtue that he tries to remake in the prince. And then finally, Lucrezia is, again, a symbol of the old, but she's a symbol of the old way that could be converted to the new way of doing things. And still all the while thinking and using the same language about holiness and virtue that she always has, but somehow converting to this new way of doing politics, this new way of moving forward in the political realm that Machiavelli is promoting, and just as you called it, a kind of amoral way.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that popped out at me was Father Timothy, when they come to Father Timothy and want his help, they test him by saying, well, there's this girl and she's in a convent, but somehow she got pregnant. You know, can you give her a draft that will cause a miscarriage, that will cause an abortion? And he's willing to do that, quote, for God and for charity. And it's, you know, just the utilitarianism long before Jeremy Bentham.
Mm-hmm. Well before. And a sort of nihilism in a certain way of, there are no transcendent forms or goods worth pursuing for their own sake. In fact, that's a fool's errand to try to do that kind of thing. And the priest, Machiavelli says, yeah, you know what? It's a good thing the priest knows that, right? We should, you know, Machiavelli says, yeah, this is the way it ought to be. The priest should say, look, there's a way to get stuff done. And yeah, I'll take a little money on the side and we can still deploy that religious language of for God and for charity, and just equivocate, just mean something totally different by it than what everyone always has meant in the past.
What was the initial response to the play? Were people up in arms, or do they view it as just good fun with everybody getting what he or she deserved? What did people think of it back in the 16th century?
So the play was well-received and popular. Folks didn't have any kind of immediate moral objection to it. You know, these kind of comedies were not unknown. I think what makes this one so particularly powerful is that it is a sort of incarnation, if you will, of his political philosophy. And so we read it not because it's really all that different or so much better than any of the other plays available, but rather because of its significance in bringing to life a political philosophy that's more prosaically described in The Prince, right? So he's saying, and I use that word incarnation, right, that it incarnates it on purpose. I think what he's trying to say is that what we need here is a rebirth of the way we think about politics, the way we think about the common, not even the common good, it's a term he doesn't use much, but about the way we move forward toward the best polity or principate we can. We need a rebirth, almost in a kind of new Christianity sense, right? Where, if you remember at the end of the play, the husband tells Lucrezia, oh, you seem as though you've been reborn. She has this kind of joie de vivre, this newness to her. And it's because she's discovered, yeah, I can find a better way forward in life if I take this more amoral approach, this, for lack of a better term, Machiavellian approach. Things can be better. And so there's a kind of new nativity, if you will, right? Because there's a son that's going to be born. She's expecting. And she has had a kind of spiritual rebirth, right? And so there's a way in which Machiavelli is claiming to be a kind of political savior, almost, replacing the Christian narrative with his own sort of political narrative around the new kind of prince that we all need.
Now, of course, you were reading this with students here at Wyoming Catholic College, and in fact, you told me that the class discussion was absolutely fantastic. Why do we read it? What made the discussion so good? And how did students respond to the play?
Yeah, that's perfect. I think the reason the discussion was so good is because the students understand the permanent questions that are at stake in this drama. So, for example, the play begins with the prologue saying, "We want you to understand a new case in the city, a new case," right? And then one of the very last lines in the play is, "It seems to me," says Lucrezia's husband, "it seems to me you've put a new sprout on the old." And so students were immediately thinking, oh, there's a question at stake here about what's the relationship between new things and old things? What's the relationship between tradition and progress? What's the relationship between the morality that's handed down through the great tradition, the great books, and that which stands over against it as being a rupture from it? And as Catholics, we're keenly interested in questions of tradition, questions of what does it take to actually receive a tradition, right? That there's a kind of work there to receive a tradition without deforming it in the process of receiving it, right? Without claiming that, no, what we really need is something radically new. So the conversation about Machiavelli's approach to things old and things new was beautiful because it's so much a part of the larger conversation of the curriculum itself. How do we receive? How do we do the careful work of receiving the wisdom of the past without deforming it and turning it into the new thing that we think maybe we want or need?
The value of La Mandragola is not in the original purpose, to make people laugh, but in what it teaches us about Machiavelli, the world of 16th century Florence, and about our own age, an age where too many of our neighbors, even many in the church, believe the great lie, because life is brief, let us follow our desires. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.